Blog Talk Radio.
A Monday warrior, mean, mean stride. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean, mean pride.
What a band. Good evening.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody.
Great.
Yeah. Thank you, Sensei. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to our program, Issue Room Mats. Call in, folks, by dialing 563-999-3090. Let me give you that number again. It's 563-999-3090. My name is Danny Venna. I'm broadcasting live from Youngsville, North Carolina. Today is June 3rd, 2022, and it's 7.05 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Tonight we have a featured guest and host. He's actually sitting in as host tonight because he's been on the program many times. So let's bring him on. Sensei Mehdi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you great.
Oh, welcome to the program, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me again.
It's, you know, we're like kids in the candy shop when you come on the program because we're very excited, you know, to hear your story and your journey. So thank you for showing up. Thanks for answering the bell. So tonight is a featured show. We call it Friday Night at the Bites. And the reason why we do that is because when we were younger, we used to get tickets to go to the boxing matches on Friday nights. And it was like, you know, you get your popcorn, your soda, and you go get your seat, you sit down, you watch these guys do their boxing matches. So, you know, we pay homage to that just by using the name Friday Night at the Fight. So we do like to give a shout out, Sensei, at the top of the program to our founder, Shimabuku Tatsuo Sensei. Thank you, Sensei, for doing the work. Yes. We also want to mention all of his first-generation students and the work that they did, because we basically stand on that platform that they built for us. And then, of course, all of their grand black belts that came after the first-generation students that did so much work to spread Ishinru throughout the world. And tonight we have a guest, you know, Albert Mehdi, where he's living proof. I mean, he spreads Ishinru and martial arts throughout the world, and that's why we call him a martial arts ambassador. So, Sensei, just real quick, how did you get started in martial arts?
Well, I have two things. Well, actually three. My next-door neighbors I grew up with, the Chan family, They would watch Bruce Lee on the Green Hornet series in the 60s. And, they were next door neighbors. I'd go over and I'd watch with them. I thought, hey, this is really cool stuff. I was always athletic as a young kid. And I thought, hey, I can do that. And I, you know, really got an interest. Then my first cousin, Salim, he came back from Vietnam. He was injured. And after he recovered, it was a long recovery, but he's from Michigan, and he would come over to Windsor. I'm at a border city between Detroit and Windsor, Ontario, and he would come over, and he would start showing me some Shōinryū, and that's what he studied, and he had a black belt in Shōinryū. Then I started taking judo in the 60s. And it wasn't far from my home. And Louis Furukawa Sensei was the instructor and quite a renowned judo instructor. And I was very lucky, you know, around 8 years old, 9 years old, to be taking the judo as well. I just had that interest from watching Bruce Lee, as many did in the 70s, you know, with his movies. But I saw, you know, I watch it in the 60s with the Green Hornet series, and then my cousin introducing me to karate, and then there were friends of my father who were involved in some boxing. I had an uncle that was involved in boxing, and other friends of my father that would come by his restaurant. My dad owned Big Boy Restaurants. We stole the name for Canada, but they would come by one of our Big Boys, and they were into the martial arts, and they'd start showing me things when I was a little kid. And I thought, this is really cool stuff. I really want to learn it. And I was very lucky that I caught on to it well. And that's what really got me started. Then I got to high school, and I started wrestling. And my judo ability helped me with my wrestling. So I would lay in a goshi on somebody, and, man, slam pin, there it was, you know. I just loved combat sport. And the rest is really kind of history. We've been all over the place with it.
So tell us, this judo practice, you said that it sort of helped you when you were in high school wrestling.
Yes.
Just share for a moment, what are the similarities, if you would?
Well, you know, when I would tie, and a lot of people would tie with me, and they'd tie like with like a Greco-Roman style of wrestling, and they would tie up. And I'd love to tie up. I always kind of sucked them in to tie up. I didn't always care about shooting and trying to take the legs and go in for like a double leg takedown or single leg. I like to tie. And, you know, I would use what we call passive resistance. You know, they'd be forcing me forward, and I would let them to a point and then let them get one big push and then big hip throw. And you'd go right into the pin. That was the technique. I used it at one tournament, three pins in under 30 seconds. You know, it really helped me from the stand-up going to the ground. You know, there's a lot of great sports out there. They go right to the ground, and they fight off the ground and so on. But, you know, I like from the stand-up to the ground, and then I'm going to get right back up. I don't want to stay on the ground, even though I have that wrestling background and that judo background. I don't want to stay on the ground, and especially in a real bad fight situation. You know, every system is great, and the fight is within the fighter. There's people that have no martial arts background that, you know, they're killers out there. And in my days, I was bouncer in biker bars and so on, live rock bands in these bars. You know, I ran into people that were just real tough. And that mix of training that I had really helped. They try and grab you, especially I'm a small guy. The big guys would try and grab me. Surprise, they were going through the air. You know, so it helped me, whether it was in wrestling or in real combat situations. And most of those people obviously didn't know how to land, and they were landing on pavement. So it really helped. I'm glad that I studied the judo. Like a lot of the first-generation people did, you know. Grandmaster Nego opened a dojo with Ernie Cates, who was a renowned judoist. You know, it was kind of instilled in us, that, you know, that grappling. And it is in our system, and it's just a matter of learning how to use it.
So I just want to ask, you had mentioned that you don't want to be on the ground.
No, not for long.
All right. Tell all listeners why, Sensei.
All right. Well, I Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, that's a beautiful art. Submission grappling, it's a beautiful art. But keep in mind, in a lot of these things, including wrestling, you have a referee. You have a bell that's going to ring, that's going to end the round. You can tap out. Now, in a real self-defense or combat situation, you don't have those things. You also could be wide open to having five people, stomp your brains in. You know, you get knocked to the ground, you got one on top of you, or you take someone to the ground, and you think it's just one-on-one, and all of a sudden, you have five people coming and trying to kick your face in. Listen, it happened to me. See, when I teach and I bring up situations, it's nothing that I haven't been in. I don't teach based on theory for the most part of my training. I'd say about 98% of my training. You know, been there, done that, and sometimes I went back and did it for fun. But, I was in those situations. Because of my wrestling, I remember one situation. I threw the guy, took him to the ground in the bar I was working, and next thing you know, I had kicks coming at my face from both sides. I mean, luckily, I was able to scramble up to my feet, and here's my basic traditional karate. They had me by the shirt on both sides. Here's a nice step in yokogeri on one side, yokogeri on the other side. There goes my shirt, and there go two people, you know, over some chairs. And, I took some good shots. Because I went to the ground, I stayed to the ground, and if you're in a work situation like that in bars, a lot of times people aren't there by themselves. And if you're on the ground, their friends are going to jump on you. And you better be able to get right back up to your feet. It's important to have the ground skills to know what to do when you're down there, but then be able to get back up and continue the fight or escape the situation, because sometimes you have to get out of that situation to put yourself in a better position. So, I don't believe in staying on the ground unless you have a referee.
Okay. That's fair enough, Sensei. And now, the last time you were on, one of the highlights that came out of that show was you mentioned mindset.
Yes.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about that tonight, Sensei, because I believe that it's the difference between how you behave and what the outcome will be. So let's talk about mindset, Sensei. What's the difference?
Everybody's got techniques, okay? How far are you willing to go with those skills? Will you do it in a real tough situation? Will you be able to do it? Physically, maybe, but mentally, will you be able to do it? The mindset is important because it gets you through some really bad situations. It gets you through a match. For example, I put fighters in the ring. You know, we've been lucky. We fought in Japan in the K-1. We fought in Bellator. We fought in King of the Cage. We fought in Shotokan. We fought in Sabaki Challenge and all the big Kyokushin events. I mean, we fought in everything, in many countries, in Gamma. You know, what made the difference between somebody winning and losing a lot of times was the mindset. It wasn't just the set of techniques they have. Pretty well everybody has about the same set of basics. Now, how far are you willing to go with those? How bad do you want to win? And that's in your head. You know, we can be strong as an ox, we can be lightning fast, but if we don't have it mentally, we're not going to win. You get hit. A lot of people, when they get hit, they turtle. You know, they cover up and hide. They quit when they get hit. What gets you through that is that mindset. The idea is, you hit me, I'm going to hit you back, then I'm going to hit you first, and I'm going to hit you harder. But a lot of people, they get hit, and they just turtle. They freeze up. They fall apart. Part of that comes from not having hard enough training. See, I don't want to be critical. Everybody can do whatever they want in their dojo and their group and their association, and more power to them if they can make it work. But you know what gets me are schools that say, I have a family-orientated dojo. You don't see a heavy bag in there. You don't see a makiwata. There's no sparring or no contact in sparring. That's like going into a boxing club and never getting punched. It doesn't make any sense. So now you have a person that has a pretty little black belt. They get out on the street and they get hit for the first time. Do they know how to react? No. They don't. Physically, they're probably okay. But they don't have that mindset where it's going to get them through that initial pain and to keep on fighting. And that can go on in any type of activity or any kind of sport. And you have to have the mindset to go for it, keep on going, get through the tough times. You know, we all went through tough times with COVID. I did. I had one of the largest martial arts schools in the province, 10,000 square feet plus, ring, cage, weight room, cardio room, everything completely matted, 30 heavy bags, makiwata, speed bags, everything, okay? COVID hit. A lot of people, you know, had to close down. I had to close that one down for a number of reasons, because we were in lockdown for so long. I was paying out so much rent with nothing coming in for a year and a half. But I said, well, am I going to sit here and go, woe is me? I turned my garage. That's where I'm sitting in right now, my garage dojo. It's got heavy bags. It's got makiwara. It's got double end bags. It's got, you know, it's got everything you need. It's matted. It's air conditioned. It's got a TV. I mean, I dusted myself off and got back up, and I'm teaching. I never really stopped teaching. Right away, I went online. Right away, I flew in from Berlin, Germany, March 2020. I got home 2 days before they closed the airports. What did I do? I went out in my driveway and I started teaching and working out and teaching. That's mindset, not to let anything defeat you. And if you don't have that mindset, you're going to lose. I don't care, like I said, how fast you are, how strong you are, how many pretty techniques you know. You got to have that mindset. How far are you willing to go? How far are you willing to take it? Like in a real bad situation, real bad fight, how far are you willing to take that fight? I'm going to take it to win. You know, in a street fight, you take second place, you don't get a second place trophy, and you got beat up or killed. So that mindset is very, very important.
Well, all right. So now when we watch you do your breaking techniques and we see how you step up and you prepare your mind, your body, your soul, whatever,
uh-huh.
to do this breaking technique, we can see the passion. We can see the ferocity. The focus. We can see the determination. So, folks, this is what Sensei's talking about. Now, we're not here to criticize anybody.
No, all right? Not at all.
We're not here to criticize anybody. You do what you do. However, Sensei said something that's so true. You have this black belt on, and it's actually a disservice to you because if you do get hit, you're going to be so surprised. You're not going to know what to do. You're probably going to do exactly what Sensei says. You're going to get the turtle effect. So that's dangerous, folks. That's why when you go into a dojo that practices, again, people do get hurt. I understand that. It's a contact sport. What do you expect? But if you don't interact with other students, your sensei, your instructor, whatever, when you go on the street and you get surprised now, you think that, well, I have a black belt. No. That's not what that is. you may have knowledge. You may have skills, whatever. But have you ever applied them? And this is what Sensei is talking about, mindset. If your mind is not prepared, you're not prepared. Because the mind tells the body what to do. So, very good point, Sensei. Thank you for sharing that with us because, again, no false sense of security, guys.
Well, you see me break, and you see the look on my face when I break. And you just saw Chucky do some breaking recently, and there's a nice photo of him breaking. Do you see the look in his eyes? Do you see, you know, it's something that he was able to develop from me teaching him, that mindset. All the fights, he's had over 300 fights. His bare knuckle record is 187-14. You know, if you don't have a mindset, you don't get through all that. When I'm breaking, I look at those bricks, and I use a technique called visualization, and a lot of professional athletes use this. They see themselves doing it, and then they can do it. You have to be able to see yourself doing it. You can't second-guess yourself. If you second-guess yourself, you're not going to make it, whether it's a match, a fight, or breaking. Whatever you do, if you second-guess yourself, you're going to be in a whole lot of trouble. So when I get out there or Cheggy gets out there to break, there's no second-guessing. Whatever's in front of us, we're smashing. That's just the way it is. We see it, and it's going to happen.
It's almost as if you will it to happen because you've been trained in such a way that you won't take no for an answer. So, again, no matter what's in front of you, your job is to take it away at any means necessary. Okay? So your mindset, again, when you step up to do your break, you do your breathing, you know, you get yourself focused, and you go through whatever it is. And we've all seen you, Sensei, and some of us have seen you on social media, and some of us have seen you live. I've been fortunate enough to be in the room when you've, you know, been in the room and doing your kata, your fighting, your breaks, whatever. And again, I can only say that that look in your eye, the look of determination, and then, of course, the confidence and self-esteem of knowing and believing in your technique, again, there's no doubt in your mind. So, you know, win, lose, or draw, there's no doubt in your mind, okay? And
exactly.
That's why, well, look, that's why I guess we get so excited about a program like this, because our loyal listeners get to get a sincere take on what it is to go and be a bouncer. You know, you're dealing with drunks, people that are high on drugs, who knows God's what, you know. Those people, they're so hyped up on drugs that Don Nagel told a story where, you know, the guy was so hyped up on drugs that even bullets didn't stop him. So,
wow.
Some of these people, I mean, this is a wholesome program. So what we try to do with the explanation, because we're on the radio, so we can't show you, but to try to build a picture in your mind's eye of just how dangerous it can be if you put yourself in a bad situation. So,
yeah, you know, because in a barroom situation, depending on, you know, the type of crowd you have, like we had live rock bands in the 70s and early 80s, you know, the crowd would get, you know, quite hyper and wild. You know, people start out having a great time, and it only takes one person to smash a bottle on the ground, and then all of a sudden, you know, things happen. And, and you can get hit by anything. You know, I've had chairs swung at me, bar stools swung at me. I've had beer bottles thrown at me. And it's not pretty sometimes. Some people say, well, all you did was fight a drunk. Well, I'll tell you what. Sometimes that's very dangerous because they'll do something, and they'll grab something and use something that they may never have done before if they were straight. And, you know, they'll catch you by surprise, or you turn your back and there's more than one of them. Somebody's going to hit you in the back of the head with a beer bottle. That happened to one of the guys I was bouncing with, one of my students, and he took a bad one right in the back of the head. You know, and, you know, there have been situations where you think you're saving somebody from a bad situation and you're trying to break it up, and then somebody else didn't like what you were doing and they hit you from behind with something. So you never totally come out of it unscathed, but at least the training teaches us not to stop, and that's the mindset until we're done our job. And I was lucky, you know, I'm blessed that, you know, I never really got hurt and was able to handle all these situations, I think, in a proper manner. You know, you're not getting down on somebody and doing a ground and pound. That's stupid when you hear about, you know, bouncers doing something like that. That's stupid, and you're being a bully, you know, and eventually you're going to get yours. I was very lucky that people, once they saw what I was doing, how I did it, respected me. There's always going to be the one that doesn't like you, you know, but they respected me because they knew I didn't abuse anybody. And back in the, like, you know, the 70s, they didn't see much of somebody doing martial arts like I did, taking somebody out of the bar. What they saw was Bruce Lee in the movies. And here's this guy doing this stuff, you know. And, it was an interesting time. But I think 70s, you know, karate was cool, you know. You know, it just, you watch the old tournaments from the 60s and 70s, you know, that was pretty cool stuff. And I'm glad that I was kind of brought up in that kind of type of martial arts training. I'm really happy with that. And I got a chance to train with a lot of the first-generation people. I traveled quite a bit, and I was very lucky to gain knowledge from them and perspective from them. So everything I do or everything I know, I have to thank them, you know, for doing what they did and me learning from them.
Yes. Can we talk a little bit about the event that you just had? I think it was up in Canada, right?
Yes, in Northern Ontario. Yes, in Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada. We do what we call the Martial Arts and Health Expo. We have 20 different things going on, seminars going on. We did it at the university in Thunder Bay. And what we do is we invite all the local schools and have their instructors come out and teach. We give all the Isham Roo students and all the other students of so many different styles an opportunity to expand their knowledge. You know, none of us are afraid of somebody taking a student away from one of us. Like up in Thunder Bay, I have 7 affiliate dojos there, all Isham Roo. And they all work together, and they work with the, what they have is, they call it a martial arts council. And they have all the different dojos in the region come together for meetings and so on. And they try to support each other in their various events. So when we were talking about doing this expo, the first year, it was basically almost all Isham Roo I taught and several other Isham Roo instructors taught. But then I thought about it. Number one, you expand the numbers of people coming in by inviting all the other dojos in, and you expand your knowledge. And it's a great time. We had Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. We had our niece. We had meditation. We had yoga. We had Kabuto, we had Isham Roo Kabuto, we had Isham Roo Karate, we had just so many different styles there, and it went on for, well, the first day, the Friday, we have our national and international black belt gradings, brown and black belt gradings, so they grade before me and our panel of black belts, our master instructors. And then the next day, we start early, and we go through to the night, and we do seminars the entire day. Then we go to the next day, we do seminars the entire day. Then the next day, we do some in the morning, and then a lot of people have to pack up. They start flying back to, you know, to wherever they came from or driving in. And we have a banquet. We have a big fire. We had a bonfire. Like just a nice party, outdoor party there, right on the lake. You have Lake Superior up there. I mean, it's beautiful, and it's a great learning weekend, and that's what it's all about. We thought about doing a tournament at one time, but we looked at it and we said we just want something where people come out and learn, and every instructor gets around to all the other seminars, and they get a chance to learn more. We've had some great instructors out that way, and we always have a great time. So we normally do it every 2 years, but because of COVID, you know, obviously we couldn't do it. And so we got one done this year, and then we are doing another one next year. And it's May 21st, 22nd, 23rd. When we have all the details ironed out, we'll post it. And we invite everybody to come up. It is a great event. And at the same time, you have a lot of fun. Because if you're not having fun doing it, even though it's serious stuff, if you're not having fun doing it, you're not going to do it. We make sure that everybody is accommodated. And I have a great team of people up there. Susan Baldassi, Shihan Susan Baldassi, she's been training under me for about 36 years now. She was just promoted to Nanadan. And then Tim Leonard was promoted to Nanadan. He's from Ottawa, and we have a dojo in Ottawa, Canada. And they work really hard at putting together. And then there's Rick Wojima, who coordinates a lot of it, and he's from Calgary, Alberta. Just a good number. I can't name everybody that's involved, but those are the main people that put it together, look for sponsors, give away gifts, at the party. I mean, it's just an all-around thing from young to old, and we have a great time. We're already planning everything for next year. We finished 1 year, and we're already in the plans. Now, the following year, we're probably going to do another one. But it may be down here in Windsor, Ontario, Canada. I may host it. So So I told him I couldn't do it next year, but the year after, give me time to work on sponsorships. We are a border city. We'll be able to get a lot of the Ishan people from the Detroit, greater Detroit area, from Ohio, you know, from so many different regions that can come out. You know, we're in an ideal location to host something like that. When I hosted the 2006 ALK World Championships, it went off without a hitch. You know, we're a border city and people came over, and now things are opening up and we can cross the borders now. Let's hope that just continues for, you know, from now on. But that's what we're planning. And like I said, it was a great learning weekend, and we just had a fantastic time.
Well, I can tell you, looking at the post that came, you know, the people describing their experience at the event, the common denominator was camaraderie. Everybody seemed to have this fellowship where everybody was comfortable. As you said, you made it fun. And then, of course, some of the people, you know, got tested. That's a great thing that you're doing, Sensei, because in order for martial arts to make progress in the world, we have to do the work. If we don't do the work, we're not going to make any progress, you know, any progress. So by you doing this work and bringing these people together and promoting this camaraderie, it's very wholesome for martial arts, because the more and more brothers and sisters that we work with, the more solid we become. So good stuff.
And that's the thing. I tell them, you know, stick together, work together, and you're going to go a lot further. I have my own martial arts organization, and, you know, a lot of people do criticize Ishan Ryu about having so many groups and so on, but we're not the only ones. You know, I'm part of Kyokushinkai, and there's a lot of organizations, a lot of them. And if you look at so many different styles, as long as the people that are doing that are doing it for the right reasons and promoting the art to the best of their abilities, there's nothing wrong with it. My organization came about, basically I already always had one, but we just never gave it a name. I just had all these clubs that were affiliated with me across Canada, because Windsor, Ontario, Canada, where I live, is the first place in Canada where Ishan Ryu started, because we got it from the Detroit area. Doug Noxon, and then Grandmaster Willie Adams and Grandmaster Lloyd Russett, and a few others that promoted it and, you know, brought it over to the Windsor, to the YMCA here, and they were in a church basement as well. And then the one main dojo that I came out of was run by Robert Markovich, who is my first Ishan Ryu sensei and who still trains with me on Tuesday and Thursday mornings and works on all his katas with me in the morning. And almost 82 years old, and you don't want to get in the way of his step-in sidekick. He'll fold you in half, you know? I mean, and it's great that my dojo, whether it was my big one, small one, is the continuation of the original Ishan Ryu Dojo in Canada. And so it spread across Canada. And, you know, eventually I, you know, went to these places and just kept it going, and we've made it stronger and stronger and built it up. And now we have affiliates in Iran, in Jordan, in Germany, and in Romania. And we have a couple other countries that are talking to me about it. And, you know, to each their own. They want to be part of what we're doing. It's a learning organization, and, you know, people are welcome. People have said, well, if I belong to this organization, can I belong to yours? I said, you can belong to whatever you want. If you want to learn, come on out and learn. You know, I mean, that's all we want to do. It's no secret that I do try to spread full contact karate training in my teachings. A lot of it comes from Shotokan and Kyokushinkai, because it's nothing that Ishinru people didn't do. You see pictures of Master Shimbuku and various people with Bogu gear on fighting full contact. The very first full contact Kyokushin tournament held by Masayama in 1962 was won by who? Gary Alexander, Ishinru. I've been interviewed by Japanese television. Remember, Fuji Television at an event said, you know, your people do really well. We didn't know Ishinru does this. We don't know much about Ishinru. And then I asked him, well, who won the very first Kyokushin tournament at Madison Square Gardens? We don't know. I said it was Ishinru. And that just answers it. We've just continued it on. It's nothing new. A lot of people, you know, fallen away from it, but we've always just done it. So, you know, it's just what we do. And so if people want to learn that, they're welcome to, you know, pick up a few training kits from me. And, you know, I'm not the end all, but I mean, I have a few tricks up my sleeve here and there. And if they want to learn some of it, I'm willing to pass it on. I mean, that's why I'm a teacher. I'm not hiding anything. There's no secrets. I'm just showing them what we do. And hopefully they're enjoying it. And I'm lucky that I get a lot of people from the Ishinru and a few other systems that contact me privately. And they send me videos of what they're doing, their sparring, their kata, and they ask me to review it. And I'm really humbled by that. I really am. Because they're not in my organization. They're friends, and all Ishinru people are friends of mine. I don't let any association get in the way of any of that. And I belong to a few different organizations. And they're friends, and I review them, and I give them my critique. And if what I say can help them out, there it is. You know, I'm an open book when it comes to that.
All right, so my next question is, as the instructor, as the practitioner that you are, do you have any problem with cross-training, let's say, in other arts?
No. I mean, my main system is Ishinru, but I've cross-trained, you know, of course, judo. I'm also a black belt in Japanese jiu-jitsu, wrestling, Rukyu Kenpo, Toyamaru Iaido, Shorinjiru. You know, I've trained and cross-trained with a lot of this. And what I did was I used it to understand what I'm already doing. Sometimes you go somewhere and you go to a seminar and somebody says something and then the light bulb went on and they, oh, that's how you do it. Because sometimes you just couldn't get it, or even your sensei would say it to you a million times. But then somebody else would say it just in a different way or demonstrate it slightly different, and all of a sudden, it works for you. So that cross-training turned on a light bulbs for me. I've asked other first-generation students, I've asked my instructors in the past, why didn't we do this and why didn't we do that? And we're talking, this is my 54th year in. And so they said, well, back then we didn't know it. Because, you know, honestly, a lot of our first generation, were, you know, they didn't train that long. And they were great at what they did. And they were tough guys, you know. You don't want to get in front of Master Nagel, you know, or any of them, because they will chop you down, right? But there was a lot of things they didn't know yet. Eventually they did. We're lucky today how much knowledge we have.
Yes.
But what I try to do when I cross-train is improve what I already know. Not so much to learn this and learn that. I don't want to be a jack of all trades and a master of none. I want to improve on what I already know. So the cross-training I've done and the seminars that I've gone to, you know, I picked and choose what would benefit me in my own training, with the mindset that I have for training, and how it can be incorporated into my teachings for my students to improve their skills. So anything I've learned, I've put it into my teachings. Some people say, well, it doesn't look like you're doing Ishinru. I say, yeah, I am. I just understand it a little bit more. You know, I don't mind saying that to some people, because when they say it to me, it's like, it's an insult, like, I'm not doing Ishinru. Of course I'm doing Ishinru. I didn't get to where I'm at by not doing Ishinru. You know? So, I was very lucky to gain that knowledge from so many different people and incorporate it into my teaching, and it just made whatever I already knew a little bit better. So that's why I do believe in some cross-training. Don't get away from your base system. Just, you know, help yourself along with it. You know, just learn a little more and improve on your own training.
And then how about your students? Do you have any problem with your students cross-training?
No, I mean, I have some that have boxed, have done judo and jiu-jitsu. You know, no, but I do want them to learn what I'm teaching them as well. But they're kind of lucky that in my classes, like if you want to get into the combat sport class, you know, you're going to learn ground, you're going to learn stand up, you're going to learn, you know, whether it's kickboxing or boxing. So you're going to learn a lot of that. But, I mean, we offer an harness class here as well, you know. So we have a variety of things going on when I'm teaching, because I've learned all these things. So a lot of them say, well, I don't have to go there because I'm learning it in my dojo anyway, you know. But I do like it that if I have somebody's kickboxing, to jump in with a boxing coach. And we had a boxing club at my old dojo. But the boxing coach, that's his forte or her forte. They're sharper at that, and they could help my fighters improve with their their boxing skills. You know, working with the BJJ person will improve on your ground skills. I'm lucky I can teach a lot of it, but that's what they specialize in, you know. And so I don't mind that, you know, especially if you're a competitor and you want to excel and say you have a certain weakness, there's nothing wrong with going there, and it's like getting that medicine for that weakness, you know, and it helps you improve in that area. But, yeah, I don't mind. I bet I do believe in the loyalty, right? You know, you train somebody like fighters. You train them, and they win all these championships and titles, and then all of a sudden somebody buys them away from you. And usually they're bought away from you somehow. But it's happened to me. You know, but they teach your own, and good luck with them.
All right, so you mentioned before about your son, Chuck, being a bare-knuckle competitor.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about Chucky, because you know, obviously he's doing the work, Sensei, so let's talk about that work, all right?
Well, you know, I started training him when he was 3 years old. Actually, what happened, I was teaching a class, and we're going across the floor doing our basics, and he was sitting there watching. He got up, and he started doing basic number one, Seikan Waitsuki, next to me, and I didn't say a word to him. I knew if I would have stopped him or corrected him, he might have just gone and sat down. And he just kept copying me and doing the basics with the class for the rest of that class. And after that, he just wanted to, you know, to train. Now, what's great is that he got a lot of fight experience. You're calling this Friday night fights. And it's funny because one Friday a month, we fought. We kickboxed. We did more of a PKA style back in the day over in Detroit. Kerry Super Kicks Roop. Do you remember Kerry Roop, world kickboxing champion? I think light heavyweight and heavyweight. He fought the likes of Bad Brad Hefton. He fought Johnny Stereo. I mean, he fought all the greats, and he was a world champion. And he's a phenomenal friend of mine over in the Michigan area, Rochester, Michigan. And he ran these fights one Friday a month. From the time Chucky was little, he would go with me, and then by the time he was about six, he was in the ring, and his first kickboxing match was against Kerry Roop's son, who was the same age. And I posted the photo of that. And he kept fighting there. one Friday a month, full contact. And then it turned into where we were allowed to do leg kicks, and we did more of a K-1 style or Muay Thai style. Then eventually they did a form of MMA to break people into it. They did stand-up striking and then takedowns into submission, but you couldn't hit on the ground. Later on, they evolved into doing full MMA fights. And Chucky was lucky to be able to get that over there from the time he was little. So he gained a lot of experience, and then we went to a lot of competitions. He's done Ishin Ryu, of course, competitions, and he's won grand championships in fighting. He's not a point fighter. I was never really a point fighter. I was lucky to win a bunch of championships. Either I got disqualified or I won. One of the two. You know, it all depends how you look at it. You know, you know, you see the guy walking away with the trophy and you don't have a mark on him and their nose is on the other side of their face. It's like, what happened here? You know, you could get hit. That person got the trophy. Come on now. But anyway, you know, Chucky's been lucky to get that. As far as like bare knuckle, he's a Kyokushinkai and Shirokan champion. He won the lightweight Shirokan title many years ago. Knocked out the U.S. Muay Thai champion in the third round with a Yoshiro Mawashigeri, a spinning hook kick. And you've seen the videos of that. What a beautiful kick. He had set it up third round. He landed it. You know, he's fought tons of Kyokushin matches from the time he was little, including my grandson, who now is 10 years old, already has two North American Kyokushin titles under his belt. That's full contact, you know. So Chucky was doing that and won a lot of the junior titles and the adult titles, and then eventually won the WFKO Pro Kyokushin title up in Rochester, New York, and he's already defended it five times. And, you know, in Kyokushinkai, there's no face punch, but you can kick the face, knee the face. It's a punch, kick, knee, elbow until you stop the person. The form of fighting is called knockdown. How do you win? Knock them down. And he'll score wazari or ippon. You know, you have to stop the person in the tracks for, you know, just so many seconds to get the wazari. You get to wazari, you automatically get ippon. Full ippon, I drop you. You're not getting up in a count of five. You know, I win. But bare knuckle. And so Chucky, like I said, has 187 wins and 14 losses in that, and holds some titles. And, you know, we're always looking for matches. He's now accepted to an organization called Senshi. It's in Europe. And it's on Bulgaria right now with the things happening in Russia. It's too close to the border and not really a whole lot's going on. He'd love to fight in karate combat. He got accepted to it, but they never gave him a fight. And we'd love to. If anybody out there knows people at Karate Combat, Chucky Mady, that's right up his alley, that type of fighting. It's excellent, you know. So if anybody can get him in, hey, we're calling upon you. We'd love to fight in Karate Combat. He's boxed. He's done MMA. He won a lot of amateur titles in MMA, and he's fought pro, he's fought in Bellator. You know, he likes the competition. And, you know, and again, he's enjoying it and having fun, and then all the knowledge he's gained from the fight, he passes on to the students. We have one young fighter up and coming, 19 years old. He's kickboxing now, and he won his first fight recently. And he's got another fight in 3 weeks, and Chucky helps him along. With another one of our old fighters, Jan Kazuba, who fought in Japan and Korea and so on. You know, we all help each other. And any knowledge we've gained, we pass it on to the next generation of students. So, you know, Chucky's been lucky to get that from so many people. And, I mean, he's very fast. And, you know, it's tougher for him to get all the training time in now, working full-time. Three young boys, you know, at home and his wife. And so, you know, we're not sponsored fighters. I'll tell you, we were in France one time, at a world championship, and I had a couple other fighters there. Tomas Kluzewski, who was a world heavyweight Shotokan champion, Kyokushin champion, international kickboxing champion. I trained him, and they asked him, like, hey, what do you do? He says, well, I work in a factory. I do attend some school, and then I train. They go, wow, how do you get a chance to train and be rated number one in the world? He said, we just train really hard. And that was a great testament to the what we're doing. There's a method to my madness, and somehow it worked. And when, you know, we were kind of proud, like when we found out that they were sponsored fighters. They get paid. They don't have any other job. They train and they fight. Any prize money is theirs, but they have sponsors that just pay the whole shot, and they don't have a regular job. And I mean, I can imagine how far we could have gotten if we had that same opportunity, even though we won the world titles as well, you know. But so, you know, Chucky, he's having fun with it. As you know, he was on Canada's Got Talent, which was, you know, quite entertaining. I think, did you see the videos of him on Canada's Got Talent?
Of course, of course.
Yeah. So he set a Guinness Book of World Records. Before Canada's Got Talent, they got a hold of it, and they said, well, we want him on Canada's Got Talent. His Guinness Book of World Records was on TV all over the world. He was aired twice on, I believe he was United States Senator Huckabee. He was on his show a couple of times. In Taiwan, they call him Iron Tooth Man. What he does, he takes a can, say it was a Coca-Cola can, and he can grab the top with his teeth and rip the whole top off clean. Now, there was an actual record. This gentleman from the U.S. did 11 cans in a minute. Chucky and his wife were watching TV, and he had done it like a bar trick before. And she says, you could do that. So they went in the backyard, and he totally destroyed the record within 30 seconds. So he wanted to find out how to get it on Guinness. So they had to get a couple of gentlemen do a national or international podcast, and they had it all set up. And he did 24 cans, so he destroyed the record. Canada's Got Talent called me. They said, we just saw Chucky on this. Would he be interested in being on Canada's Got Talent? I said, well, what do you want him to do? We want him to beat his record. And he did. On Canada's Got Talent, he set the record again and did 41 cans with his teeth. I'm lucky. I have a cousin that has 7 dental practices here in town. So. But he just rolls his eyes and shakes his head, you know. Yeah. And so now it looks like a couple of the other talent shows from a couple other countries have called, and they want him to break his record again. So next year, over in the U.S., you'll get a chance to see him. And I believe in Europe as well. Still, you know, has to be approved, and but they're calling him. So that's cool. Now, the second time he went on, he went through the audition. He made it to the second stage, right, the semifinals. And he did my breaking show. So I had him working Makiwara. I said, Dad, I want to do your breaking show. And first I said, Chucky, there can only be one. How can you do my breaking show? But you know what? He, you know, but it was great. I got a chance to hit him with big sticks and break him over him.
Yeah.
So he did my breaking show. I mean, he punched and kicked through everything, the baseball bats and punched through the bricks. And then Howie Mandel, he looked at Chucky. Who was that gentleman that was just breaking all that stuff on you? And so Chucky starts talking about me. Oh, that was my dad. He's a world champion. He's this and that. He says, well, you tell him I'm going to call Child Protective Services on him.
Yeah, hitting the
stuff. So, I mean, yeah, you know, Chuck has fun. And what he was also trying to bring awareness to, if you watch the interview, he has alopecia. And when he was young, he was bullied. He tried to hide it. He would come home sad all the time. He'd wear a hat, and they allowed him to wear it in school. He was getting, you know, bald patches. The hair was falling out. The hair on his eyebrows fall out. And people can be cruel. Kids can be cruel. And, you know, back in the day, we used to always tell people, you were probably told this, I was told this, never fight. You have martial arts training. Never fight. If you fight, you're a bad person. You know, what happens when you tell people that, you're victimizing the victim. And I didn't allow Chucky to fight. No, this was in the fifth grade. He was being picked on and bullied by this one kid over and over and over again. So, you know, as a parent, we're trying to do the right thing. We talk to the school. We talk to the school board, see if they can handle it, you know, and take care of it. Well, when your son comes home crying and going to bed with a hoodie over his head, enough is enough. And I told the school and I told Chucky, if this bully puts his hands on you, you drop him like a bad habit. And Chucky was lined up, bell rang. He's lined up to go into school. You know, bullies aren't brave people, and they're usually not tough. It's just that people don't squeal on them or they just don't get caught. So they think there's something. Well, he comes up from behind Chucky and punched him in the back of the head five times, and Chucky just turned, and I told him, and I told the school, Chucky is now allowed to fight. And I told the teachers in the school, listen, you don't understand. By the time he was in fifth grade, he had so many full contact fights, he could probably beat any of the teachers in the school, right? But I didn't allow him to fight. And so this kid punched him. He turned, hit him with a body shot. Didn't want to bust up his face. I always say, don't leave marks on the face, something the judge can see. But seriously, body shot, down, kid's laid out. He runs in the school and tells the principal, I just got attacked by this kid. Now he's out in the schoolyard, I hit him, and he's laying down there, and I knocked the wind out of him. Well, I tried to suspend my son. Then I had a talk with the school board, and the suspension was lifted. Because we have a thing in Ontario, the Safe School Act, and we do believe in it. We don't want anybody fighting. We don't want the crazy things that are happening where, you know, people are going and killing people, you know, in schools. But administration has to step in and handle it, and we shouldn't have to handle it ourselves. But when it gets to a point where the bullying doesn't stop, some people, you know, unfortunately lose it, and it's not the right thing to do, but some people are in desperation, and they just lose it. Chucky didn't lose it, but this person punched him, and he just punched him back the one time. And I told the school board, if my son would have jumped on him and ground and pounded him, then he wouldn't have to worry about suspension. He'd have to worry about me. I would have taken care of the situation, and he would have never done that again. And, you know, they understood where I was coming from, and they understood that he was a good kid, and he was, you know, their system of anti-bullying just wasn't working. So what Chuck was trying to do, and he talked about it in the interview on Canada's Got Talent, was bring awareness to alopecia and to bullying. And the way he spoke on that show, I was quite proud of him. And he made a lot of sense, and he made it to the semifinals, and that was great. And he got his word out. So I think the martial arts helped him with that. In so many ways, in developing his self-confidence and getting him through a real tough time in his life.
Well, listen, you know, you said you had him on the deck at a very young age. Being around people that are disciplined, practicing, doing the work, that has a tremendous impact on a youngster. Now, you being the instructor, being dad, also has a tremendous impact. So to the parents out there, Sensei, talk to them about this bullying situation, because it's a bad thing. I mean, kids, you know, they commit suicide, Sensei, and they do all these things to themselves because they're being bullied. So can you just spend, you know, a couple of minutes talking about and give the parents some advice?
Well, we always say get the child help. But you know what the first help is the parents talking to the child, the parents listening to the child, the parents looking at maybe what some changes. Like, kids are always going to change. They're going to have their mood swings and so on. You know, we've all had our kids. But when something doesn't look right or feel right, talk to them. Get them to open up. You know, if you can't, get somebody else and talk to them. Talk to their friends. Sometimes they have a best friend that may open up to you so you can find out what's going on with them. You know, unfortunately, down in Texas, you just had another shooting. I don't know any more about it. I mean, this child, and they are children, might have been going through bullying or, you know, or something like that, just had enough. There's no reason to be out there shooting and killing people. But unfortunately, it happens, and it's happened and happened and happened again. So, you know, parents have to listen to the child. You know what I've heard? Well, you know, my kid's tough. They got to tough it out. Life is hard. You know, they have this attitude. And those are the kids that end up doing something absolutely crazy. And that's unfortunate. You know, there was, with Chucky, for example, I had to get my wife, Angie, to go and talk to one of the parents because a few other kids were trying to bully because one was bullying. I said, Angie, you better go talk to him because, I mean, I'm not going to unleash on them, but I can have a temper. And I told my wife to go and talk to them. And the one parent, and I'm glad I wasn't there, because if he said it to me, unfortunately, he would have been on the ground. Oh, it's a tough world out there. Tell your kid to tough it out. That is one of the most stupid comments that I've ever heard. You're letting your kid become a bully. See, like I said, bullies aren't brave people. They don't want to get caught. And eventually bullies will keep doing it and keep doing things, and it's going to escalate, and it's going to get worse. Now, if you see that your child is a bully, you've got to nip that in the bud. It's not cool. It's not them being, like, standing up for themselves. No, there's a problem there as well. And you got to find out what that problem is on both sides, for the bully and the person being bullied. There's a problem, and parents have to talk to their kids and nip it in the bud and lay down the law and the rules. And if you can't do it yourself, most of the time you can if you're really a caring parent, but then get them some help. There's no shame in getting them some help, whether it's a counselor at school, you know, whether it's a psychologist. We have a few of our black belts that were psychologists. For years, Dr. Karam, one of our black belts, I would talk to him and listen to him. I learned a lot from him over the years on how to talk to people and talk to students in the dojo. You know, you've probably had parents come to you, and my child is doing this and doing that. Can you talk to him? And they respect the sensei, and they listen to the sensei more than they would listen to the parent. But then the sensei says, now you have to start listening to your parents. And then, see, we can intervene in some way. That's what's nice sometimes about martial arts instructors. We can intervene in a good way and help straighten out the kids. So martial arts is a fantastic thing to curtail that bullying and get kids away from that violence. Martial arts is not violence. It's anti-violence. It's keeping you safe. And so, like I said, talk to your kids. Look for signs. Look for something different. Don't be afraid to ask them if something's going on or you're having a tough day or what's happening at school. You know, when we found out what was happening at the school, we were at the school right away. Right away. And we tried to do all the correct things. you know, unfortunately, Chucky had to lay this kid out, but he didn't keep hitting him. So that was fine. And let's put it this way. He was never bothered again. But, like I said, keep an eye on your kids. Keep an eye on their behaviors. And because they're acting tough, it's not cool. It's not cool. Some parents, unfortunately, think that's cool. And they have to be tough like that to get through life. No, I don't think so. You know, listen, me and my son, physically, I'm going to say it, we are tough. We can fight. We've thrown down. Chucky's bouncing bars as well. You know, we've fought some gangs. But you'd never see us out there, you know, starting anything, go out for dinner and start something. I'll walk away before I'll get into it. You know, you can call me all kinds of names. I'll just walk away. But don't put your hands on me or don't put your hands on my family. And, you know, there is a line. But we don't act that way. So if you see that your child is acting that way, then straighten it out. Fix it up. And, you know, get them to have trust in people. You know, the school counselor. Tell them like kids sometimes they don't want to ask for help in school. They say only, oh, I'm dumb if I ask for help. No, now you're very smart. You're intelligent if you're asking for help in any way, whether it's a math question or problems you're having in school, in other areas. Ask for help. Tell your kids there's nothing wrong with asking for help as well. And if somebody is bothering you, tell somebody. Tell them to tell somebody. You're not going to get mad at them for telling. Tell somebody. And now they can get more help.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us because it's a widespread problem. A lot of parents work. They don't listen to their children. They only holler at them when they do things wrong. So there's no... let's call it one-on-one with the child where you can sit down and say, why are you behaving like this? What's happening? So that's missing. So a lot of parents, again, you know, they're working, they have responsibilities, and these things go by the wayside, and it's affecting the children. And now with what's going on, the children, you know, between COVID and all these restrictions and not being able to go to school, it's affected the children, and it's affected the children in a negative way. You have firsthand experience because, again, you experienced this with your son. And
yes.
So many other parents, Sensei, they just don't know what to do. They don't, all right? I don't know of a handbook that says, well, when your child's getting bullied, turn to page 29 and, you know, see what it says. So
yeah.
We all sort of have to go through this and try to get as much knowledge and experience as possible to learn how to talk to our children, to learn how to listen to our children. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. And there's no handbook and it's trial and error. And sometimes you mess up, but then, you know, correct it, you know, and just try and do the best you can for your child. And that means being there for them, being there for them. And, you know, if you're there for them, they're going to be there for you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I see that we've gone past our hour now. So, I have this question. I always ask Ishinru practitioners this question about impact, Sensei. You being a practitioner, a Sensei instructor, you have a responsibility, as you said before, to pass on this knowledge. Well, have you ever thought... Have you ever sat down, has Albert Media ever sat down and thought about the impact that you've had on others?
Well, you know, you brought up, you know, the COVID situation. Now, when COVID hit and all of a sudden I fly in from Germany and everything is shut down, and in our province we're shut down quite a bit and longer than other businesses, these small fitness businesses, we were shut down longer. And it was quite an impact. It was so hard on us. And trying to recover, we're all still trying to recover from all that. And, you know, most of us just didn't know what to do. You were either going to try to keep going or you're going to quit. Some people did stop. They quit. I mean, it was financial burdens. I mean, they couldn't pay rents. They couldn't pay for a lot of things. They looked for other jobs. I mean, I was putting out, like I said, for a year and a half, $5,000 a month with nothing coming in. And we were closed down all that time, and my lease came up, and, you know, I couldn't renew. Because even after the lease was done, the fitness businesses were still closed down for another 4 months, and they opened for a month, and then they were closed again for a while. So, yeah, this was really, really tough on all of us, and tough on me, you know, just trying to get through it. It's like everything was just taken away in one swoop. And I'm not the only one. I spoke to a lot of martial artists, small fitness businesses. They, you know, they're in contact with me, and we would talk. And some went through it harder than others. I'm lucky that I have a close family, and you know, we're able to get through all this. But what's a funny thing? Chucky was working day and night. He works for the beer store. It's called Brewers Retail, and it's a provincial, it's not a government business in Canada. The liquor store is, but it's regulated by the government, and they were so busy. People were buying beer like you would not believe. You know, I was having a hard time. I'm a person that's around all these people all the time, always teaching for, you know, the last, 48 years I've been teaching on my own, just with my own club, full-time for 42 years, and, you know, started 54 years ago. So I was always around a lot of people, and then this hit, and then there's nobody around. And, I mean, I kept training, and I put the camera on and go on Facebook Live when I learned how to use it and just try to talk to people and pass on my knowledge and, you know, got a lot of great compliments and, you know, it just, and now I do it on a regular basis. But you know how hard that was on me and people like me, that all of a sudden it was just gone and there was nothing we could do about it. Like, you know, if you opened your school, you were going to get fined. Every fine was $1,000, and it would go up and up and up. And it knocked the heck out of us. I know I'm just starting to ramble now. And back to your, what was the original question? Now I'm sorry, Dan.
No, that's okay. But I can hear the pain in your voice, Sensei. But impact. Do you ever think of the impact that you've had on others, Sensei?
Well, that's what this led to. Now, all of a sudden, I was getting messages. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That's what I was getting. What you're doing is keeping me sane. I'm out. I can work out. What a lot of us did, whether it was Zoom or Facebook Live, we're the type of people with the mindset that we can't sit around and do nothing. And because we have that mindset, we impacted others. We got them off their, lazy boys. I always say, yeah, I sit on my lazy boy, but Chucky gets really mad when I do that. But,
like
that. You know, I got messages to thank me for, you know, for what I was doing, how I trained them. I got messages. There's one gentleman. He was RCMP, Royal Canadian Mounted Police, on a special unit. Actually, he got in a special unit because he got a recommendation letter from me. He needed a, you know, my recommendation to say that he trained with me and, you know, and talk about his abilities. And it was great that what he said to me was, you know, you wouldn't believe how many times what you taught me saved my life. And I posted just the other day about a gentleman who was an RCMP. He was in Manitoba. He was Brandon, Manitoba Police. We had a dojo out there. And I was actually in Saskatchewan, Swift Current, Saskatchewan, teaching when he got shot. He was on a police chase, stolen car, and two guys in the car. He's chasing it down. One guy in the car shoots a .44 Magnum through the back windshield of the car they stole, through the front windshield of a police car. Thank God it hit the steering wheel, it bounced off, but then it went in his face and out his face. Anyway, he flew back into the seat, and he said, all of a sudden he had a flashback of me doing Sanshin Kata and listening to me breathe, take control, breathe, breathe. He grabbed the steering wheel, he grabbed his radio, and called for help. And he sent me the actual call for help on a disc. And so I know from a few situations like this that as martial arts instructors, we have a great impact on a lot of people. And that impact saved a few people's lives. That impact helped people get through school in their studies. I had a young man, became black belt. When he started with me, he had a lot of focus problems. And he was really a D student. He would get D's all the time. Within 1 year of training with me, he was an A student because he developed that focus. In my children's class, even my adult class, I have three main rules. Look, listen, and learn. If you're looking and you're listening, you're going to learn. And I tell him, you know, that's the same thing in school. You have to look, listen, and learn from the teacher. And when the grandmother came and told me about the marks the child was getting, and now he's in university, he's doing great, and there's story after story. I'm not the only instructor that can tell these stories. The impact is great on these people, these kids. Whether you're young, you're old, it can help them in so many different ways. And, you know, I'm happy. Like, when like I said, when COVID hit and I started just doing all this stuff and me being around people all the time and that was all taken, you know how tough that was? That was, like, and I'm not hearing from a lot of people. You know, sometimes you think, you know, you did this. And nobody's calling you to say, hey, how you doing? You know, do you need anything? And unfortunately, that also happened. But then I had to learn to understand that a lot of people were also going through a lot of difficulties. But then I started hearing from the ones that were thanking me for what I did. And I tell them, I'm only a karate instructor. That's all I am. But if whatever I did, whatever I said, helped you in some way, I'm glad it did, and I'm very proud that it did.
Well, it's nice to hear in your own words that you do acknowledge at least the fact that the work that you do has a profound impact on others. So, yes, they use the word sensei, teacher, instructor, but life coach, also applies here. You're also a life coach because when you see something, even if the student doesn't mention it to you, if you see something, you'll address it. And you'll give your take on it and try to help that person. That's your job. Your job is to try to help that person.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, life coach, that's a word that I use because, you know, you do so much work that, you know, it permeates. And not just with that person. Because now that you've put those values and those means and methods into that person, they use it. And it comes across in their daily lives, how they behave in the dojo, all these factors, you know.
Sure. Well, I've been very lucky to teach for, you know, a variety of groups. I've taught for the Sexual Assault Crisis Center in the past. I was the first man that they brought into the center to work with the ladies. And, you know, they had that trust in me and that confidence in me that I would, you know, help them in the right way. And then after they went through, I forget how many weeks it was, that they would also do all the other training, the counseling and so on, they would bring me in for the final one to help these ladies have some confidence to get back and walk the street, you know, just get out there with their head up and, you know, not be afraid to walk out there. And I was very honored and privileged to have that happen to me, to be able to help them like that. And, you know, just there's so many other areas that I've been lucky to teach. You know, we teach in our dojos, but martial arts can be done in so many different areas. I've taught in the high schools from grade 9 to grade 12, where I go in for 2 weeks during their phys ed courses, and I teach them basic self-defense. I give them some kickboxing skills. And they love it. You know, I teach one semester a year for our college. I teach a use of force class for potential corrections officers. And, you know, I've had a lot of them come to me later after they were hired and thank me that what, you know, what we taught them really helped them. And that's satisfying because I got to tell you, you know, during the COVID time, I almost questioned because I didn't hear from some people, which I was surprised there were some that you just thought, hey, I haven't heard from that person. I'm really shocked. And, you know, it's somebody that you've done a lot for, you know, no hello. And then you start saying to yourself, you know, what good am I? You know, all I do is teach people to punch and kick. And you question your value. And it's happened to me. You know, I'm human, right? Some people think I'm not, but, you know. But, you know, I'm human, and you go through that. But COVID also got people to open up a little bit. And the things that I heard made me realize that I'm more than just somebody who teaches people to punch and kick. So, yeah, I don't know if I'm a life coach, but I'm lucky that I've been through a lot. I came up through a really good family. You know, I'm lucky. I went through a lot of crazy times, but I came from a privileged family as well, you know. But I never acted that way either. Like, you know, I know people that they have so much money, and I don't even want to be around them. I don't like their attitude. They think they're the cat's meow, you know. And I have family that's ultra wealthy, ultra. I'm not kidding, ultra. And you know, those ones, they're my family, and they don't act that way. You wouldn't know that they had money. You wouldn't know it until you saw their yacht, you know. But you know, they're great people, and. You know, you just don't know what to expect from people. Like, those ones are great people. They wouldn't act a certain way. Then there's people that shock the heck out of you with the way they act. And I'll tell you, when I did get those calls and emails and so on, people thanking me, and now I'm getting a good number of people asking me to review their kata or their fighting skills from people from different organizations, that makes me feel good. And I'm privileged and I'm honored and I'm humbled when they do that. And it makes me feel like, all right, what I've been doing means something now. That I'm not just a karate instructor. Even though I say that, I'm just a karate instructor. I think I've impacted people in other ways. And, you know, like I said, I'm very honored.
Well, again, that's why I use that word life coach, because, again, the impact is profound. So now let's spend a second talking about this, because since we're on the subject of impact, since they tell my loyal listeners, if you would, please, what is the impact that Shimabuku Tatsuo Sensei has had on Albert Mady?
Well, I'll tell you a couple of things. You see somebody who's not very big in stature, and I've trained with Master Uesu as well from way back and so on. Not very big people. But the confidence and the abilities that they have, you know, you don't judge a book by its cover. And seeing them and me training in the system that Master Shimabuku developed and training with many of the first generation Marines in the past, and a lot of my mindset came from them. I mean, there was mindset. But it impacted me where I have that confidence. Because I was the smaller guy in school. I got picked on. When I started grade school, I didn't speak English. I spoke only Arabic. And I was smaller than everybody else. And that was tough. That's why I was so sad when, you know, my son got picked on, and that's why I was so angry and maybe couldn't go talk to certain people, because I was angry. And I don't want to do anything out of anger. So seeing the films of Master Shimabuku, talking to people that trained with him, and these were big, tough guys that trained with him, but they respected the heck out of him. They respected the heck out of his abilities. He could take them down, you know, really with no difficulty. And I thought, wow, he can do it. Why can't I do it? So that boosted, in a way, my own self-worth, my self-confidence. You know, now it's easy to get access to watching films of Master Shimabuku, and stuff is starting to come out of the woodwork that we've never seen before. And you see the speed, the accuracy, it was done without effort, it seemed like. And when I see that, I try to emulate that. And I hope I've done a good job. But that impacted me, where it really gave me that confidence, because, like I said, I was bullied, I was picked on, and I wouldn't fight because I was told not to fight. Here's a quick story. A grade school teacher, I think it was in grade 5 or 6. Like I said, I was the smallest one in the class, in the school, and he brought wrestling into the school. But I had already been taking judo for a bit. And he knew I was taking judo. And he knew physically I was strong. My father was a physically strong man. Me, Chucky, a lot of people in my family, we have a lot of physical strength. So it's just genetic. We're lucky with that. And he knew I was doing judo. He knew I was strong because I was in track and field and do all that other stuff. And he brought wrestling in. He put me up against the tough guy bully in the school. And there's my ogoshi, my hip throw. Kid tried to tie it because he figures he's going to bully me, right? And hip throw, slammed to the mat, knocks the wind out of him, pinned. Teacher, his name was Mr. Smith. He raised my hand, and he said he can do this to anybody in the school. And, you know, even my judo instructor wasn't a big man. But, like I said, watching Master Shunbuku and other Okinawans, they weren't big people. But what they're able to do with their bodies against somebody was just, like, it was outstanding. I mean, it triggered something in me, and it really helped me out.
So you would then say that Master Shimabuku Sensei has had a profound impact on your life. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. If he didn't develop this system, you know, we wouldn't have had the impact we have in the martial arts. I mean, this system I believe in. I mean, every system can be a good system. Every practitioner is as good as they want to be and they can be. But Ishinru Karate, it's not fancy. You know, we don't have flying techniques. We're flying through the air and jump spinning and all that stuff. But it sure comes in handy when you're in a bad situation. And I'll tell you what, you know, you watch, you see photos of Master Shunbuku, you know, hammering a nail into a board with his hand, climbing up a pole upside down, things that you would think would be, like, almost impossible. And he was doing it. And you go, my God, that's amazing. But, again, you have to say, with the right mindset, I can do that too. And he did it. He led the way. And we followed. And now we're leading the way.
And then this question as a follow-up. The message, you've been practicing martial arts pretty much your whole life. So the message that you've learned from Master Shimabuku Tatsuo Sensei in studying Ishinru, how would you put that into words, Sensei? What's the message?
The message is it's very simple, but it's very complex. So, like I said, we don't have a lot of fancy techniques and so on. So I tell people, keep it simple. And that's what Master Shunbuku did. When he developed Ishinru and further developed it when he got contracts with the Marines on Okinawa, he developed a system that could be taught and be effective in a real combat situation in a short time. And that's one of the things that I admire about what he did. He kind of pushed away all the other stuff that, I wouldn't say it's insignificant, but for what he was doing and who he was teaching, it made no sense because these people had to have those abilities and skills in a short amount of time. And for him to you know, be able to get that. I mean, get that out to these people. Like Grandmaster Don Nagel. Didn't he win the All-Okinawa Championships as a white belt? You know,
yes, sir.
With his step-in back kick and so on. And, you know, it showed. It's not the belt either. You know, it's the training. It's the individual. And for Master Shunbuku to get that across to these people, and then they come back to the United States, and they spread the art in a very good light, in a very good light, and developed phenomenal instructors. For this man on this little island to develop that and have it just take off in the United States and now in Canada and, you know, throughout Europe and other countries, it's unbelievable. They, you know, what he was able to do. And I don't think he ever expected that that's what was going to happen. He was just doing his thing, and his thing was something that was, you know, magical. You know, it worked. It really worked. He caught a lot of criticism, you know. That didn't stop him, you know. Turn the punch over, vertical punch, you know. some on top, some shouldn't be on top, all that. He didn't listen to the critics, and he developed his system. And, you know, I was in a tournament one time, and it was an AAU tournament in Michigan. I already competed in a few, and I got rated in, I don't know, southwestern United States and so on. And at this tournament, I took a silver medal. So I walked up to the one instructor, and he was actually Japanese. And I wanted some, you know, constructive criticism. Could you tell me what I could do better, you know, for next time? And he looked at me, he said, "Your punch, no good." That's how he said it. But he said it in such a derogatory way, saying the vertical punch was no good. The Ishinru punch was no good. Listen, I'm not an angel. And the way he responded, and it was very insulting to me, I just said to him, "Well, step in front of it and see what happens." Let's put it this way. He left quickly. You know, what Master Shinbuku did was develop a very powerful, explosive punch that can be done from close quarter combat. That's real fighting. You don't have to step across in a big, long step, you know, a 3-foot step to fight. That's not a fight. You know, a fight is like the person's on you. You know, I've knocked people out from very in close when I was bouncing, very in close. And he developed this system that was so much different than the other styles, but in many ways the same. But the differences made the difference. They turned it into such a great combat form. Now, people have to study it to really understand the combat form, whether it's in, you know, it is in the kata. Every kata, as far as I'm concerned, are textbooks of fighting skills. Most people just do the movements, but you really want to learn kata, you have to study kata, and then you have to learn it. Whether you're standing up, sitting down, lying down, the techniques are all there. And Master Shinbuku took the katas from all the systems that he studied and kept it very, very simple. We don't have real complex katas in the movements that we do. But in the same way, they are very complex if you really study them. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely, Sensei. We talk about this all the time, that each kata offers us skill sets, different skill sets. You know, Seisan offers you, you know, that wonderful block, the double punch combination, kick punch combination. It's just a wealth of knowledge. So now the next question about Shumabuku Tatsuo Sensei, because he has had a impact on your life, this question that we ask comes across this way now.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are an instructor and you get to see some of the gems, like the films of him and the stories about him, when you're an instructor out there on the deck, you mentioned you tried to emulate some of the things that he does. So as an instructor now, and you also mentioned the word that you're responsible.
Mm-hmm.
As an instructor, what is the most valuable thing that you teach in Ishinru Karate?
Well, I'll tell you, at the recent testing that I just hosted, we all learn the basics. Don't get away from the basics. Don't try and fix what's not broken. Just learn how to use it. And see, what I saw when I was testing some people for some advanced ranks for 7th and 8th Dan, they did their kata. Well, they made it their own. Let's put it that way. They made the kata their own. The basics were all there. But the way their bodies moved, the way they executed the force, the power, the explosiveness, each one was slightly different, but all had the same effect. And they made the cod of their own. They made it work for their body type. And when I watched this last group test, I was very impressed by that. I try and teach my students to try and make the skills their own, but that only comes from first developing the base. And then when it comes down to really having to use it, your body is going to react the way your body should react. It'll move the way your body should move, but you have the basics. And I think that when you watch Master Shumbuku do kata, to try and do it exactly like him is difficult. But that's why we have our basics, you know, our 15 basic blocks and punches, our 8 basic kicks, and we teach them in a very, I'd say, mechanical manner. And then as we start advancing, there's more flow. And that flow comes from your own abilities, you know, whether it's going to be smoother, faster, stronger. But your body will move according to how you're built in a way and your mindset. And I teach all my basics to everybody exactly the same. Do the kata exactly the same. But then if I do my kata full out, it's going to look different than the next person doing it full out, because I made it my own. But it's Ishinru. It's something that we could talk about forever, but you have to see it and you got to feel it. And I think, you know, I wish I had the opportunity to train with Master Mbuku. That would have been phenomenal. I've had to train, like I said, the opportunity to train with, Master Weizu, Master Weichi. He was in Canada a few years ago. He started at Ishinru far after, I think after I had my black belt. But, you know, he's from Okinawa. He's had that perspective from there. He's learned a lot there with different people. It was interesting watching him move. Watching the way he does certain things, and you know, he trained right there on Okinawa, and he looks a little different doing it, right? But then when we all go back to the basics, pretty well we're all doing them the same. You know, we all look the same.
Right.
Yeah.
Continuity comes to mind there, Sensei. Yeah. We have about 10 minutes left to our program, and you know, it goes by so fast, but is there any question that I haven't asked you that you wish I would have asked? And I'll just turn the mic over to you and you can close out the program.
I said, I'm a karate instructor, a martial arts instructor, and I tell people to be more open-minded in their training. I incorporate whatever you learn. Go to seminars. I go to seminars. I put on my black belt, sometimes one without any stripes on it, and go to the back of the room and just train. And, you're not there to try and outdo anybody. You're there to try and learn. So, you know, as they say, empty the cup, you know, and fill it back up. And that's what I think more people should do. A lot of people don't, sometimes the egos are there, and that's unfortunate. Enjoy your training. If you're going to have this egotistic, attitude all the time, you're not really going to enjoy yourself, and you're not going to get respected. I hope that I get some, I'm getting respect for what I do, because I do it to try to improve one's life, whether it's physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. I hope that's what I'm accomplishing. But as a sensei, you have to address all those areas, physical, mental, spiritual, emotional. You address those in your teachings as a martial arts instructor. It's a martial art, okay? But again, you got to learn to keep it real. You know, I'm seeing a lot of people not keeping it real. There's a lot of good stuff on YouTube. I study it. I might be on the stationary bike, and for an hour, I'll watch things on YouTube. And there's some phenomenal stuff, and there's stuff like, come on, really? That's what I'm thinking. You know, they're not keeping it real. Some of the stuff, if you did it that way, it's going to get you killed. When Lars Anderson brought me to Denmark a couple of times, he's a great practitioner out there, and what I told, a lot of them were military police. They did 3 years in Kosovo, you know, good guys and tough guys, big guys. There was one guy, I think he kind of snickered when I came in because I'm not a big guy. And as I said, I got bullied because of that. So, you know, he shouldn't have triggered that. But anyway, I took him down real hard, face first, had the hand behind his back. And I told him in the street, and I said this earlier, there's no referee, there's no bell, and you can't tap out. You underestimate anybody in a situation, it can get you killed. In your line of work, it will definitely get you killed if you underestimate. So what I say to a lot of martial arts instructors, you know, keep it real. I mean, don't do all this fancy stuff that people go, wow, look what he just did. He jumped up 10 feet in the air. And, hey, I used to be able to kick a basketball net. You know, I had that jumping ability. But will that win you a fight? No, it was just a challenge. And, yeah, I tried it. You know, somebody said, hey, can you do it? And I did it. Okay. But keep the training real. Keep it tough. Keep it strong. There should be, I believe, a certain amount of contact, you know, and, hey, put on some body armor, put on headgear, and put on some 16-ounce boxing gloves. Wear your mouth guard, put on your cup, put some shin pads on, and get there and fight. And, you know, get people used to having somebody really coming at them. And, yeah, you can still get banged up a little bit with all that gear on. But when you get better at it, you shed the gear. I've posted videos of our training, and you see our guys banging with hardly any gear on. Sometimes they got a lot of gear and they hardly have any gear on, and they're not getting hurt. Why? Because they trained properly. They weren't afraid. They blocked. The defenses were in place. They didn't underestimate their training partner or their opponent. That brings me to when I have competitors go in the ring. I tell them, you know, you're good, but respect the person you're going in there. That person's world champion. There's a reason why that person's a world champion. They trained really hard to win it. So keep your defenses in place. No matter how good you think you are, stay sharp. By having those defenses in place, you have a better chance of winning. The other thing is, don't let their world championship intimidate you. One reason that they are world champion is because they haven't fought you yet. Okay? So they're aware that that person has the ability to put their butt out, lay it out right on that ring or, you know, in that mat. But they're going to be sharp. They're going to have their defenses in place and let that person worry about them. You know, there's a lot of things, areas in martial arts training, which goes back to mindset. You know, we talked about that the last time. And having that positive, go-for-it attitude is very, very important. But that you're only going to have that ability if you train for real. People say, what do you mean? I'm training for real. I do traditional martial arts. Traditional martial arts is not just wearing a pretty white gi, putting on a pretty black belt, and getting out and punching and kicking in the air. You've got to practice on each other. That's why wrestlers and judo practitioners are tough guys in a street fight. Let me tell you, because they slam each other all the time. They get a hold of you, you're going for a ride. They're used to getting hit and banged on the floor. They're tough guys and girls, you know, and the jiu-jitsu people. They're you know, they get put into locks and chokes and so on. They're used to that contact. Karate has to get back to it. Karate has lost a lot of respect because people are doing family-oriented karate. I want my families, if they're attacked, to be able to defend themselves.
Absolutely, because then they build this false sense of security thinking that pretty white gi and their pretty black belt is going to save them. And it doesn't.
Yeah.
And
no.
Now they're shocked. And now they're shocked. They're like, oh, my God. You know, I've been going to this class all this time, and I had no situational awareness. I was adrenalized. I was frightened. I was surprised, and I didn't know how to deal with it. So that's what Sensei's talking about, guys. If you don't make it real and become desensitized, listen, if you get attacked on the street, you might very well get frightened. You might very well be surprised. You might very well get adrenalized. But if you don't train and know what to do when your body is trembling like that, that's why I say Sun Qin pays me the biggest dividend in martial arts, because it prepares me to get hit.
Yes.
I mean, as simple as that, okay? So you want to talk about impact? I was bullied too, Sensei. I was this little Italian kid from Brooklyn, New York, and I moved to Long Island. Oh, you think you're tough because you're from the city? No, I don't think I'm anything. I'm just Danny. And, you know, it was horrible, but I didn't want to go to school, all this stuff. And God bless me with meeting who went on to become my father-in-law, but at the time, a mentor and an instructor, someone who could teach me, one, don't put yourself in those situations. You see the bully coming, move on. Just move on. Yes, Sensei, go ahead.
But with real training, see, win, lose, or draw, at least you are in the fight. Okay? I tell my fighters, win, lose, or draw. If you did all the training that you were supposed to do and you still lost, but you did everything, but at least you were in the fight. That person knows they fought you. You weren't a walkover. So same thing in the street. I mean, sometimes it could be somebody gets a lucky shot in and you're down. You could have, you know, all these belts, but it can happen. That can happen too. So by understanding that, you're a better fighter because you'll stay sharp, you know. And, being Italian, I have a Sicilian wife, and I will not mess with her. Let me tell you something. It's testa dura, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah. I didn't know Angie was a Sicilian, but
she's amazing. She's from Alcuma, man. I'll tell you.
Oh my.
She's Sicilian.
God. Are you nuts, Sensei? Oh my God.
I know. That's why I train the way I do. Today I did a great training session. I have to.
You gotta keep
those wooden spoons can hurt.
Absolutely. Well, we got 90 seconds left. We got 90 seconds left, Sensei. Let me just take this opportunity to say thank you for spending your time tonight, Friday night at the fights, on our program. A lot of information came out tonight. I wish I could have talked about your being what I call an ambassador to martial arts, especially Ishinru, taking it to the streets all over the world. We didn't have enough time. We didn't get to any callers. I mean, the chat box has been going. But, again, that 2 hours goes by so fast. So thank you, Sensei.
Sure, and that's what I want to do is keep being an ambassador. We have fought in France, Japan, Australia, Budapest, Bahrain, Amman, Korea, Singapore, Amsterdam. We've been all over the United States and Canada. And we always try and bring martial arts in a good light, bring Ishinru Karate in a good light to wherever we go. And now we have more clubs in other countries. And now that the world's opening up, I'll be back out there doing those seminars. And, hopefully being a good ambassador for the system and for martial arts in general. And that's what I want to do.
Thank you so much, Sensei. Thank you for doing the work, honoring Shimabuku Tatsuo Sensei, all of your instructors, the students that you work with. Just awesome work, Sensei. Keep it up. What can I say?
Thank you. Thank you very much. And everybody take care, be safe. And now that I can cross the border, I'll see some of you over in the U.S. That'll be great.
Very good, Sensei. Good night now.
Good night. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Awesome. What an awesome show.
Wow.
Yeah. We'll be right back.
your heart a